Would you agree with Duchamp's important figure for...
Well, I indirectly, because I was teaching at Rutgers University, where there was a big group of Fluxus people, all of whom were involved very much in Duchamp. And they were interested in written material and in ironies of art and non-art and things that would, I think, be Duchampian. But how influenced I was by them, I don't know, but they were there. And it's hard to think that I hadn't, that they had no influence.
And it wasn't mm-hmm. conscious.
It wasn't conscious, but it was
would
there.
Would you see the word appropriation, which is so fashionable now, mm-hmm. is actually something which applies to work that both of you have done for 25, 30 years in terms of appropriating styles, appropriating images, and making them your own, which does mm-hmm. seem to relate to the concept of the ready-made. But mm-hmm. you could trace that back even further if you wanted to, say, the way Manet quoted from Raphael or Titian or Velázquez. I mean, would you see the line going back?
There's a different aspect there, but I mean, it's done differently. It's a study. It was part of the tradition to do that, and it isn't quite the same as translating Picasso into a comic strip mode. On one hand, it's exactly the same because all I'm doing is translating it into my own way of working, but it doesn't seem that way.
But Manet's Déjeuner sur l'Elbe was just as shocking to his contemporaries as perhaps.
It was shocking, partly because it seemed commercial, and he did work from postcards sometimes and things like that. So there, it has that. I mean, it's not unprecedented at all, I think. It's just that every style and every period, when there's a change, looks different, and everyone's horrified and thinks it has nothing to do with art. And so it just goes on and on. I don't think it's a lot different, but I think it seemed a lot different.
Were you and your colleagues met with particular hostility by the abstract expressionist generation?
I think so. I mean, nobody came up to me, it's hard because there were people who were very much for it, and a few people who were very much for it. Almost all the articles written on it were against it, but there were a lot of articles, so it was a lot of publicity, and there were critics violently against it and very much for it. So. It was ferment. I mean, nobody had looked at me for 15 years before, so I was happy just to have the attention.
How important were the dealers in New York in terms of actually giving the work that people were producing some sense of unity, some sense of community? Because here, there wasn't anyone like Castelli. Here in the early 60s, and Robert Fraser is perhaps the closest that the British came to having a pop art dealer.
But much later.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they were very important in presenting it and as a movement. And because I know that Castelli, for instance, saw within a 3-week period me, Warhol, and Rosenquist. So he knew there was something going on, and Oldenburg had already been showing, I think, at Martha Jackson's New Forms, New Media, and show in 1960, I think. And so there, and then Green Gallery, who was a kind of ally of Leo, an ally of Leo Castelli's, both showed, he showed Rosenquist and Siegel, and so there was a group, and it was presented as a group and as a movement and all of that, which I think helped a lot in promoting it.
Yeah. Yet Castelli didn't take Warhol on right away.
No.
He had you already.
One of his mistakes, but...
The thing that I found interesting about what was going on in America is that it was about ideas. Paintings had become about ideas instead of about gesture. Everyone was talking, all the art critics, all the theorizing about art was that it was to do with gesture. Jackson Pollock was dripping paint on. There were these fascists in France. It was all supposed to be mindless. You just put paint on and something happened. And Clement Greenberg was advocating the idea that artists didn't think, they painted from their stomach. Something went on in a diaphragm when you made a work of art. It had nothing to do with grey matter. And what Duchamp had always said was that it was grey matter. And that's why he was outside. That's why he felt outside. And then there were people like Roy coming along, and not coming along and making a brushstroke, but somewhere I think of as a good example as being the brushstroke painting, to say that a brushstroke can be converted into other kinds of marks and mean brushstroke, but have nothing to do with brushstroke physically, is a very interesting philosophical idea. And when you're confronted with your own mind, you open up your blank piece of paper, you can't look out of the window, you can't go out into the landscape and paint what's there, you can't bring a model in, you've got to think what's interesting. And so you're thrown back on ideas, and it's still left with your mind. And I think the common characteristic of the artist that we label pop, for I don't know what reason, is that they are thinking about the problems of creating images with nothing more than their own mind and some fairly simple materials. As an example, Jim Dine came out of the Happenings thing. The first things I saw of Jim Dine interested me because he would sometimes have an almost blank canvas, a blank canvas with a real wash basin. The word mirror or whatever written on the canvas, and so you were forced to think about art as not being about paint, as about not being métier. It's about something else, and it's about what art is. And I think that is a common characteristic for those people in England who were doing paintings, and those called pop, and the Americans too, and also in Paris, the new realists were doing things which I found related to the approach I had to the problems of making works of art. And so this idea of climate, it isn't so foolish because it was happening in France as well.
There's an apparent anonymity and depersonalization which characterizes almost all of your work, really, since the early 60s, and quite a lot of yours as well. And was that largely a reaction against that
personal
abstract
touch,
expressionism idea of the artist's personality being somehow in the substance of the paint and in the gesture?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's true, and I think Richard said it very well about the mind and as opposed to the touch, and that there's no touch, apparently, in our work. And but that there's much art of the past, Poussin, Ingres. I mean, you could even think of a lot of periods where touch wasn't the important part of the work, at least. And so it's just that art can be done in a different way, and it depersonalizes it, but it also, it's fairly evident who did it anyway, you know. So it it's a depersonalized style, which is because it just seems printed, and it's supposed to appear to be done by a machine. And it's printed, and it's fake, and it's a copy, and it's done from a two-dimensional subject rather than a three-dimensional subject. And it does all the things that art isn't supposed to do, and therefore isn't art.
The interesting thing is that one turns very often to art, as you have with Picasso and the brush mark itself, and with comic strip. It's all a form of art. And that's, I think, because a good deal of what we see is... The reason I found it so fascinating that we were not going to nature any longer was because perhaps 80% of our visual attention as 20th century beings, or mid-20th century beings, was that we looked at two-dimensional things. We looked at magazines, looking at cinema screens, at video screens, and this is part of our world, but we're also looking at art books. So we were looking at reproductions of paintings. So they were as much a subject, could be as much a subject, as a film star or an ice cream cone. And it seems to me to be very crucial, this idea of subject matter. The thing that I found fascinating about the American approach to it was that there was a kind of need for vulgarity. And I wanted to oppose that. I felt that there was something wrong about this, that because you were presenting yourself in a vulgar way, that is to say, you were using deliberately crude language, that you might feel the need to, in the beginning, to express crude subject matter, hamburgers and broiler or a ball of twine. It had to be fairly anonymous or unthinking. And I felt it necessary to oppose that idea, and that the Guggenheim Museum was just as much a subject as a sort of donut diner in Hollywood. You don't have to make a split and say this is legitimate subject matter for a pop artist, and that is not. All the world's pop. Frank Lloyd Wright is as pop as Henry Hathaway. And I found it interesting that the move went in a good direction when Picasso became a subject for pop. And so the world was leveling out. I didn't like that separation into certain legitimate subject matter and another area that was not. But it's all happened nicely and it's all leveled out and we've got where we want it.
But you specifically looked at some very sophisticated design like a Brown product and referred to that in Toaster and in your critical arts.
Yes, and I did them simultaneously. I painted a picture about Marilyn Monroe at exactly the same time as painting a picture about a Brown product designed by Dieter Rams, whom I regard as the greatest industrial designer of the period. So not only was I doing two very different things, a high-style industrial design and something that was regarded as very vulgar in Hollywood, but they were contrasted in handling, that one of these paintings was handled, and the other was as close to a simulation of the original as possible.
But I get the impression in your work that although you were interested in representing objects from very early in the 60s, it was almost like an archetype of an object, that to actually be able to identify a particular design would have been counter to what you were trying to do.
Yeah, I did things that were in general usage and the maker was not identified or unidentifiable. That's right. End of thought.
Do you think it would have changed the meaning of the picture? Would it have interfered with...
Yeah, somehow I didn't want to use brands or something. I mean, I did do Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and nameable people early, but in just 61, they sort of ended there. I redid them later in certain other ways, but mostly they were cartoons that seemed just in the general acceptance. I mean, I don't think anybody knows who did the cartoons. They were just a pretty girl and a handsome man or something, and that was it could be, and it was supposed to be completely anonymous. And I did purposely, for some reason, not want to get into brand names or anything specific.
When you started referring to the work of other artists, then it did become very specific, rather than a Fauve style, it would be a Matisse reference.
Yeah.
Why did that change occur?
Well, I don't know why, really. It was... I mean, it's very hard to refer to... you can refer to a kind of a work or a specific work. I mean, I did landscapes and still lives as a kind of genre, but I also did specific Picassos, but the Mondrians are not specific Mondrians. They are very much like Mondrian, but they're no particular Mondrian. The Cézanne was from an Earl Lorenz book, which illustrated a Cézanne. It wasn't from Cézanne at all, and because I wanted, because my drawings looked diagrammatic, and that was a diagram, and also a diagram that seemed to be in complete opposition to what Cézanne's feeling was. I mean, Cézanne said, the outline escapes me. And here is a diagram of a Cézanne that had very hard outlines and shows you how the little wainscoting or something is up higher on one side than it is on the other, the way it would be in Cubism or something later. And also, you know, kind of, it just looked silly to me in a way and looked anti-Cézanne, but it also didn't look like art either. And so to make a painting of that would be the same as making a painting of a cartoon. But I mean, you're right, there's a contradiction that sometimes I did specific works of art, but not so much specific works of commercial art. But there were more types.
Am I right in thinking that Earl Lorenz, who did the diagrams, the book with the diagramming Cézanne pictures, tried to sue you over your use of that?
No. Well,
wrote letters to the press.
Something happened, but it wasn't very. The University of Southern California owned the copyright on his book, and they wrote me a letter from their lawyer. But it's when I explained what it was that was the end of it. I mean, it really wasn't a big episode.
In a way, it brought up the subject of authorship, which is largely what you were dealing with anyway.
Yeah. The thing is that I knew people would take a large painting of a cartoon as exactly the same as the cartoon, it just looked like the same thing bigger, and I realized that I realized how people would react to that after abstract expressionism. But I knew what I was doing with it. You know, I mean, I had a feeling that I was really changing it a lot. I mean, in its composition and so forth. I mean, I was trying to reorganize it. But that it's hard to tell when something's reorganized. I mean, a portrait is reorganized, and a portrait can look like the person and be done by three different artists and look three different ways. In music, if you take a tune which you can hum and you change a few notes, it's immediately obvious. But somehow you can't remember drawing very well. And so if you do a drawing of another drawing, the people remember generally, they think it's the same because it looks somewhat similar. And what is the difference between a portrait and a real person? Well, I mean, one is a work of art and it's organized in a certain way, and it can be done a hundred thousands of different ways, infinite numbers of ways by different people and even by the same artist. And it can, any one of those can be art, or any one of those can be non-art, or just terrible, or something. No, but they can all be convincingly like the person. Well, the same thing's true. It's just doing a portrait of a two-dimensional subject, and you're doing it in a particular style. But I understood that it wouldn't be seen that way. I think it is now. I mean, I think it's understood, and not too many people are worrying about whether it's art or not. And I think people have been broadened in what they accept as art now, that it isn't just gesture, which it sort of was at the time I started. I mean, people didn't think it was completely mindless, but they felt that intuition was all you had to do. And if you interacted with the work, it would come out to be you personally. And when I did that in my abstract expressionist days, it came out to be de Kooning. I think that was true of almost all of the fourth generation abstract expressionists.
there was something very exciting about my experience of your the first work I encountered of yours, which seemed that there was a new compositional event occurring in your work, that seemed to be your invention. It was like looking at Degas for the first time and realizing that the picture was composed in a peculiar way because he must have had access to a camera or photographs, and there was something quite novel happening. And what was novel about your compositional device was that it was a single frame extracted from a sequence which was about action. And I thought that this was the basis of your work. You moved away from that somewhat, but even now there's a feeling that there is a way of framing a picture which is quite unique. That is to say, the edges of an image are tremendously important. Is that
I think something
you considered very carefully at the beginning?
No, I think it really comes from the fact that the probably cartoonists themselves had this view. You get in airplane dogfights, you get the view, which is one you would only get from a moving picture or a camera or something else. It isn't the same kind of view you would get standing on the floor and painting something. It's you would never be in this position. I mean, you certainly couldn't be painting in an airplane or something. And so I think it comes from maybe from the real cartoonists looking at photographs and painting things
what
in unusual
ways. What you did was to take
ways.
It out of context and isolate it a single frame.
Yeah,
that's
of course,
what
that's
made
different.
It extraordinary.
It makes it more absurd, really, because it's part of a story, and I'm taking part out that implies something happened before and after, and you don't know what it is, and all of that. And I picked them to be kind of disturbing in that way, or humorous in that way, or evocative in some way.
Roy, your paintings always look as though they've been done without any kind of hesitation or any struggle. I mean, totally the opposite, again, of the previous generation, which wanted to dwell on the struggle and on the difficulty of making work. And yet, this exhibition of your drawings is perhaps more revealing of the processes than an exhibition of paintings would be, in terms of actually showing how an image is arrived at or what changes are made to it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about actually making these works public in the same way as the painting? I know they've been exhibited and reproduced before.
Well, they probably look softer or not as hard as the paintings, or not as complete, and maybe more expressionist in a certain way, some of the drawings, because changes occur in the drawings and the composition is worked out usually in the drawings. And more the way it would be in classical art than the way it would be in expressionist art, where it isn't just that interaction. It's fairly well worked out and before it gets to the painting, and then it's continued on the painting, but I have a fair idea of what it'll be, and I do a lot with collage and try purposely not to show the tracks of my work in the finished painting the way, which again is in opposition to abstract expressionism. Which really went out of its way to show this interaction. And many people before that, I mean, Matisse has movies where he shows how he reworked compositions over and over again. And this is one of those art ideas, you see, that we're opposed to because it becomes a cliche, because everybody understands that. And Picasso did much the same thing, shows you where he vastly changed things and it was just the process, and it wasn't the end product that made any difference, but of course we all know it is an end product in the end, and that it's emphasizing something. It's not that this kind of rigidity exists in my mind. I think you actually have to be quite giving and understanding about change when you do work on a painting, otherwise you really can't get it together. But I don't think you have but I felt it was a cliche to show that and to harp on that aspect of it.
Your exhibition, Richard, is a very specific selection of your work. I mean, it's not really showing the main kind of thrust of your art. Would you say that drawing is as central to your work as it is to Roy?
No, I'm not even sure what you mean by main thrust. I never thought I had a main thrust.
I think in terms of the form, the installation form is something which you've used comparatively rarely.
I found it interesting when you were putting these slides up. What continually struck me was that there was one side with a very consistent style. Something was happening which expressed a single personality. And on the other, there were all these funny things that looked like somebody turning over the pages of a magazine. And I became very conscious of the fact that I'm not concerned with, have never been concerned with creating a style for myself. I don't know that Roy ever thought of it as creating a style. It's just doing what he was interested in. But the installations that are here are a kind of consequence of pure chance, in a way, that somebody asked me to do a show, a room in a show for the Arts Council with three other artists. I really didn't want to do it for a long time, and eventually I agreed, and it was done. And then a man came from Documenta, the director of the Documenta, the last one, and he said that he was interested in that room, and he saw my painting, which was then on the easel that I'd been working on for about a year, and said, could you make an installation of that, because Documenta is into installations this year. And I thought, maybe I could make an installation of that, and began to think about it. Documenta, Dr. Schneckenberger, never got back to me, and I hadn't got the painting ready in any case, so it didn't happen. But it was very nice to have these thoughts, this seed put in my mind, and I began to work on that. And then Mark Francis came to me and said, we'd like to do an exhibition of your recent paintings, and could it be sort of based on the room we did for the Arts Council, and we'll put the paintings in that context. And I thought, well, it would be nice to do this thing with the painting that I'd thought about, I mean, with the lobby painting. And the most recent other painting that might be available was a loan of the Citizen painting from the Tate. And since I'd got two, I thought I might as well make three. And so I put the painting in a cell. And then we were left with some other space which wasn't being occupied. Was it reasonable to turn that into a gallery and just hang some pictures in it, or could we somehow make that another environment, another room which was related to the others? So it was all done on a fairly ad hoc basis. It wasn't theorized about too much. But I think that after it was gelling, when the things were coming together, it occurred to me that maybe this was a new form, that there was something which I hadn't done or hadn't seen, where a painting, which was a sort of isolated phenomenon, which was having an environment created for it, to see this painting in the best possible way. And there were all sorts of metaphysical overtones that developed, a room with mirrors and reflections of the studies going on in this interrelationship. And I don't see it as a thrust of any kind. I see it as just serendipitous occurrence.
In the 50s, you organized a number of very influential exhibitions, which in a way seem to relate to these installations and the idea of controlling the whole environment in the way in which the work is seen.
Yes, well, I do like to hang. I've always been interested in installations in its sort of Bernice Rowe sense. Just hanging pictures is a kind of activity which can do a great deal for the painters or not. If anybody else hangs an exhibition of mine, I feel uncomfortable, as though it's not right and I could run it better. It's not only things that I hang myself of my own, but I've hung, through an experience with the ICA, I've hung shows of Henry Moore drawings and anything you can think of almost. I've made their hangings. When I went to Newcastle to teach, it was my responsibility to put things up in the gallery because I liked doing it. Nobody else was willing. And I also enjoyed making the catalogues for shows. So I make my own catalogues and put up the pictures, and that awareness of the possibilities of creating an extension to the work of art, the pictures that you've got can be made more by the way they're presented to the public. And that is something that always has interested me from the early 50s even. I'm not even talking about the 56 post-pop period, the Whitechapel Art Show. I did a show when I had just emerged from the Slade, which was called Growth and Form, which was my first experience of making a space. And I think that activity is a rather important one for other people. Boyce, for example, is an incredible user of his own individual constructs. They only begin to live and sing when he disposes them in a room. And it's what he does with the space that is operatic and Wagnerian. Things really begin to happen. And Boyce's reputation is bound to suffer because nobody will be able to do it anymore. You'll never be able to see a voice as it should be, because the voice was the whole space. And so I think that my interest in this show has something to do with that, that there is a new kind of form which is possible if you think about artworks in this way.
Thank you very much indeed, Roy and Richard and Marco, for asking these questions. It's been an absolutely memorable evening for me. I mean, it's a real treat to be able to just sit and listen to people talking so articulately about art. And so thank you very much indeed. Thank you.